Perfect.
Hi, hello everybody, and welcome again. Don't adjust your sets. We are in fact back. Welcome again to Racing Refresh Happy Hour. This one, episode 55, titled Saturday Night Special. We are season 2, episode ever so fittingly. I believe it's 21. I'll be damned if that ain't so fitting. Let me bring in some folks that are going to help me get it done for the evening. Let's bring her on in here. She is the, you know, she puts the produce and produce it, really. I mean, there's no one that does more for this brand than this beautiful lady. She's Ryan Blaney's biggest fan and knows him pretty personally. He just doesn't know it yet. Let's bring her in. Producer Peggy, come on in here. How are you? Welcome back.
Hello.
It's me. I was wondering if maybe you had something to say about NASCAR. See, we're on the podcast.
I feel like I've gotten different NASCAR merch since the last time we did something, but I am drawing a blank. So
nice. Well, in that case, Freddie, thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you. He said, "Welcome back, guys. Miss watching the videos and miss watching you guys." That's right, Freddie. We are back, and I don't know if we're better than ever, but by God, we'll be just as good. I promise you. Joining us this evening in place of one Adam Carabine for one evening. Who's that coming down the track? Oh boy, it's that mean machine in the red and black. Look, he doesn't drink anymore, thank God. But other than that, he is one hell of an obnoxious Georgia fan. Let's bring him in, Mr. Fizz himself. Kyle Finley, come on in here.
How's it going, Logan? I love that intro. Go Dogs.
College football season is upon us, buddy. It is upon us. And I know there's a NASCAR show, but I had to give it to you given that we just got started with Florida State and the Yellow Jackets the other day in Ireland, of all places. But how are you, my friend? You made it to Daytona.
I did. I was down there for the Cup race. I didn't make it to the Xfinity race because I had a football game to officiate that night. But we got down there, had a good time, had a good long drive back. So I'm tired, but I'm firing on about 6 or 7 cylinders right now.
Look, we'll take it. We're like a BJ McLeod special right now. We'll take what we can get. Thank God for you coming on. We appreciate it so much. We're going to have some fun over the next hour or so, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. We'll see how it all shakes out. With that, producer Peggy, any final words before we get started?
No.
Okay. With that, it means it's time for our weekend review. All right, Kyle, you know how this works. We got to talk about it. Historic Cup Series win at Daytona. Harrison Burton, or as I like to call him because I like to put a little stink on it, Burton, got it done for his first career win. That's historic for a lot of reasons, given the Burton's family and, you know, everything, their ties to NASCAR. But not only that, it's the 100th win for the legendary Wood Brothers organization. You were there. Let's talk right now about Harrison Burton and just what were your thoughts on the win?
Well, I have several thoughts. First of all, congratulations to Harrison Burton. That's a huge moment in his career. getting a chance to win a cup race for what could be the last time. We don't know if we'll see him back in Cup Series after this year. But being 34th in points, completely out of the playoff picture, and now all of a sudden he's back and back with a vengeance. Congratulations also to the Wood Brothers, one of NASCAR's most historic teams. 100 wins is a huge milestone to achieve for any organization, and I'm glad somebody like the Wood Brothers could finally get that done. But now to the unfortunate circumstance that Harrison Burton's win Saturday night leaves us with one fewer playoff spot, which really took a lot of the air out of the bubble race this year. Now, all of a sudden, Bubba Wallace and Ross Chastain, who were fighting like crazy for that last spot, are now in a must-win situation, as obviously is Kyle Busch. It seems that they're going to have to win at Darlington this coming weekend to seal their chances to get in at the playoffs. It looks like pointing their way is no longer feasible.
Yes, that cold lady in black. And this year, she is the regular season finale, pardon me. What are your thoughts on that? Let's talk about that for just a moment. You know, we're getting a different flavor this year. Darlington is the regular season finale instead of Daytona. You know, you and I, we talk NASCAR all the time with a bunch of group of friends, but I don't know if you and I have personally ever talked about this. What do you like it? Do you not like it? Do you prefer it being Daytona? Do you prefer it being somewhere else? What are your thoughts?
I personally like it. I get that it was moved partially because of the way that the schedule falls out around Labor Day this year, that it got moved up one race. Have you ever been to Darlington, Logan?
Haven't had the pleasure, my man. Haven't had the pleasure.
You got to get down there. I've been a solid 12 to 14 times. I'd have to look at my list to know for sure. It's an absolute treat to go to. It is a small town in basically the middle of nowhere in South Carolina that becomes huge and comes alive when NASCAR comes to town. Takes you right back to the old days of NASCAR. It's a tough track to drive. It's starting to get to the point again where it eats tires. So we're getting back to the old lady in black as it is. It's hard to get around there. It's hard to be fast there. It's hard to be consistent for 500 miles, and it's even harder to win. So I really do like that spot. In terms of Daytona being the last, I don't like a crapshoot race being the last race right before the playoffs. So I think this is a good change. I personally prefer Daytona back in its July 4th spot, but
amen. You know, and the church did say it. Yes, sir.
That's a conversation for another day, though. I don't know that we want to get into that on this podcast tonight.
Like, I'm all about, let's take it back to the 4th of July spot. Hell, we can go even old school before you and I were born there, Kyle. They were running those suckers on like 10, 11 a.m. I'll get up and watch them. I don't give a damn.
10 a.m. on July 4th, no matter when it falls.
Let's go. I'm ready. I'm ready. Look, Darlington happens to be my favorite track on the circuit, truly. The Southern 500 is my favorite race of the year for those aforementioned reasons that it is. It's a bit of a throwback. It's obviously a driver's track. We know it's literally too tough to tame, as they say. But and there's just something magical about that place. Not quite Daytona, don't get me wrong. It's not quite the World Center Racing, but there's it's another one of those tracks, but with these walls and these turns could talk, that have a lot to say. Unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say that. I'll definitely miss it. I'm going to try to creep back into the hotel in Indy and flip her on. But I'll be in Indianapolis with the beloved producer Peggy this weekend for an HRA. So I'm going to try to catch it Sunday evening back in the hotel, and I'll text you, let you know, send you all sorts of feet pictures. But
don't get us too excited now.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, we're just, you know, some of it's got to stay private. I get it. Austin Dillon for the win on Sunday night. Freddie is one of those Dillon fans after Richmond, if you know what I'm saying. He really is. And I know that you and I greatly differ on all that, and we're going to talk about it momentarily. But first, let's talk more about the Wood Brothers. Let's not gloss over the fact that 100 wins for the Wood Brothers, a legendary organization, truly the last of the dying breed in NASCAR. I know they're a Penske satellite team, but I mean, it's still the Wood Brothers. And, you know, I got to cover a press conference today on the Wood Brothers, and I'll have that story on Racing Refresh in the next 24 to 48 hours. But you being there, and obviously a lot of people don't know this, but you're pretty damn close to a NASCAR historian. So what does the Wood Brothers 100th win mean to you? How do you put it in perspective?
See, I'm conflicted on this. I don't know. One, it means the world to me that the Wood Brothers and that whole family finally got win number 100. That was a huge milestone they've been chasing ever since, you know, Ryan Blaney was there. We all thought it would happen a little sooner than it did. Burton has had some struggles the last three seasons with them. So I'm really, really happy for them. And even I'm happy for Harrison Burton too. But there's kind of a part of me that was hoping it would happen next season when they get Josh Berry over there and they really start to change their outlook and the way they approach things a little bit. I think they are setting up to continue to be a bit of a competitive team once again in NASCAR, because for the last couple of years they haven't been. And for a large majority of their life in NASCAR, they haven't always been competitive. They've had competitive spurts, but the 90s with Michael Waltrip and then the early 2000s with Elliott Sadler, I know they got one win in that like decade-long time. But, I mean, they've been dangerously close to shutting their doors time after time throughout the last 30, 40 years, and still they continue. And they find ways to get it done. So I guess my overall takeaway is I'm just going to be super thrilled for the Wood Brothers, that team, everybody there. Like you said, they're a bit of a Penske satellite now, but it's still the Wood Brothers. It's still got that iconic 21 on the side. And as long as it stays that way, I'm going to continue to wish them success in everything that they do.
Amen to that. Look, it is. It's just – you know, you put it in great perspective. A lot of people don't, if you don't really pay attention to the kind of the behind the scenes and nuts and bolts of the sport, the Wood Brothers have had hard times to hang in there as long as they've had. They've had great times too, don't get me wrong. You don't get to 100 without having great times. But it's been several times they've had to scale back to part-time. I don't even think they ran the first truly full-time year until like Kyle Petty in 85. I mean, they always have just kind of pieced things together and they continue to do so. And really, I don't want to overstate or be melodramatic or hyperbolic, but the Wood Brothers 100th win to me is a testament to the human spirit, right? I mean, to me, that's what it is. It's a testament to just not – like it's a generation of people. It's a whole family of people just not giving up on their racing dream. And so it could not happen to better people, and it's just – you know, in an era where we have gone away from the mom-and-pop aspect of NASCAR, obviously the sport outgrew that. It's just nice that for 1 week at the World Center of Racing, that Harrison Burton gets it done for the Wood Brothers. I can't put into proper words how cool that is on just a lot of different fronts. Because we love new winners anyway, both. And so it's so special. But yeah, to me, it's a testament to the human spirit and resilience of the Wood Brothers. And frankly, resilience for Harrison Burton too. That's gotta be tough. You were told, look, you're not good enough. You were getting you out of this ride. And so just an amazing, amazing moment Saturday night, and hopefully many more to come for the Wood Brothers. And frankly, hopefully a few more to come for Harrison Burton too. He's a very likable young man. Easy to root for. And if you didn't love that Jeff Burton fist pump in the booth, check your engine, give it some gas, people. Check your engine and give it some gas. Cause that
covering
was
covering his crazy eyes a little bit as he got emotional.
Yeah. I'm not some big Jeff Burton stan, but just as a human being, it's just incredible to see that emotion. And I'm glad they got to share that On an underrated note, I'm glad Leonard Wood is still here to see it. You know, he'll be 90 next month. I asked about him today in the presser, and they said he might come to Darlington. He's not sure yet, but he's over the moon about the fact that they got their 100th win. And so I'm so glad he's still here to see it. Any final thoughts there, Kyle, on the Wood brothers, on Harrison Burton, on anything else you want to talk about from Saturday night? Lay it on me.
I'll have one final quote on the Harrison Burton Wood brothers thing. I do think it's special that a team that's been in NASCAR for 65 years got their 100th win with a driver whose family has been around NASCAR for the last 40 years. That there is a special element to that. And we don't want to take away from what those two families have accomplished, whether this is Harrison Burton's first win or not. His dad and his uncle and his cousin, Jeff Ward and Jeb in that order, all have been around racing their entire lives. And so it's really special for that family too. To now we get to say, well, two generations of Burtons have won Cup Series races. And this time they happen to do it for an organization as great as the Wood brothers.
Couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't have said it better. I do want to talk about one more thing for Daytona the other night. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. We saw that kind of scary crash with Josh Berry. And he was upside down, and then when he careened head first there, that's back-to-back weeks, Kyle, where cars are off the ground again. It feels like we were going real good on keeping the cars on the ground, but that's back-to-back weeks now that we've got cars upside down or at least not on all fours, and that's always a problem. You were there for that crash. What was going through your mind as it happened? What was the vibe like? And what does NASCAR got to do to keep these damn things on the ground?
So that was a terrifying moment. I don't know if I've ever seen 150,000 people all go silent at the same time, but we saw that happen in the stands Saturday night. When we saw that wreck happen on the backstretch, we were right in front of a screen that was just – we were right at exit of pit road. And so there was a screen right in front of us. They zoomed in on him, and we saw the hit. And then we see the cars coming around. I happened to be listening to Bubba Wallace's radio scanner at the time, and Freddie sounded concerned. He said, there was a big hit on the backstretch. Slow down. We're probably going to stop it here. And I switched over to Josh Berry's radio, because there was no updates coming to us. Like, we didn't know if he was okay. There was no movement in the car. It was taking him a while to get it turned over. So I switched over to his radio, and I let you guys know in the chat too, that, that Barry was communicating with his crew and he was okay. He said it felt weird, but it wasn't really any different than any other hard hit he's had. It didn't hurt worse or anything like that. Yeah, NASCAR's got to do something. If you'll notice, we were a Joey Logano contact with the 34 from having another car get airborne at a place where they could end up in the catch fence in the corner. NASCAR's got to do something to these cars. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know enough about the aero testing that they've already done. I know it concerns them, but these cars are more prone to get airborne than any generation prior to them since the invention of the rear spoiler. And I think it has a lot to do with the underbody work, having a flat sealed underbody with the rear diffuser on the back. As soon as these cars get turned around, that air can just shoot right underneath the car. And as soon as they get a little air under and get lifted, it turns them quickly. We talked about it after the race with the whole group that I went with. We thought that some solutions that were posed, at least, I don't know if they would be right. I don't know what the answer is, would be possibly to get rid of the sealed underbody and the diffuser at plate races and short tracks. I think that could be a start. That would help with the runs that these guys get and being stuck in line, as well as hopefully keeping the cars on the ground, because it creates a rougher surface for the air to go through rather than just smooth and sliding through. And so it could both help the racing and the safety aspect from the drivers. But yeah, NASCAR has to admit that they've got a problem on their hands. So something has to be done, whatever they do to try to keep these cars on the ground.
There's been a lot of talk over the years about how, in a lot of people's estimation, NASCAR doesn't take safety seriously enough. And I think we can have a great, lovely debate on that. But I think they have taken seriously when the cars get off the ground in recent years. I really think they've tried hard in that particular aspect to make sure that doesn't happen. So you know they're working hard at it. You know that someone's probably literally studying it right now at this hour. They should be watching Racing Refresh Happy Hour, but nonetheless. And so, you know, hopefully they get them on the damn ground and can keep them on the damn ground. Cause you know, we have the core of the joy, no great. I mean, the air just took it and all of a sudden here we go. And that's just, you know, some people are not so fond of the beating and banging of NASCAR. I know that you have your issues with it. I think that is part of the NASCAR thrill myself. That's part of the brand. That's part of the 75 years. That's my estimation. There's a big difference between that and having a giant stock car, or now really a spec car, look like a matchbox car. That's not something I'm interested in seeing. And I like the rubbing. I like, you know, there is an appetite for hard racing that happens to turn into a crash. But there's a big difference between that and these cars flying through the air like Ricky Bobby, and it's not sustainable. We can't have it. So I'm hopeful to get them on the ground. I did want to touch on that briefly because, goodness, that was scary. And the way he creamed head first upside down. Freddie wants to know, do you guys feel like the fines that were given out of the 22-3 team were fair or unfair? To him, what the three thought or said, shouldn't have said, but he didn't agree with the fine because NASCAR easily pulled him aside and said, hey, what you said was wrong. And kind of stop that whole deal. Look, I think the fine to the 22 was very fair. I think it was $50,000 because, let's be honest, Joey Logano was upset and having a bit of a temper tantrum. Not that I blame him. He got screwed out of the win, potentially. Again, as we're talking about, safety is paramount. So I definitely think the fines to the 22 were fair. And I honestly, I think the fines to the 3 were fair. I know Kyle and I, and we might end up having it here in a moment, but Kyle and I, we stand at different posts on the whole Austin Dillon issue. But we do have to acknowledge that some bad behavior technically took place. So, yeah, I think actions have consequences. I think we'll have a wonderful discussion here in a few minutes about whether that's too far or not. But I think the fines are fair. What say you, Kyle?
The fines are totally fair. You will get no argument from me out of Joey. Particularly when you watch that onboard and he turns towards Austin's wife and child while revving the engine, no matter whether he's in control of that car or not, that is an unsafe action that should never occur. It can lead to a whole other conversation if those people should not be on pit road. But one way or another, come as it may, they're there. You can't do that. Totally agree with the Joey fine. In terms of the 3 spotter, I'm good with the fine there. I'm not necessarily okay with, I'm not behind the closed doors, so I don't know, what went on during that appeal, but they did get his suspension reduced. So he was back at Daytona this weekend, from 3 races down to just, he just missed Michigan. I know Logan and I have different opinions on the 3's penalties outside of the fines. Logan thought it was, you know, he's a bit on the more lenient side towards Dillon. I think NASCAR didn't go quite far enough, but that's a conversation we can have only if Logan decides to have it, because I'm good with avoiding it too.
We will have some variation of it here in a few moments. Let's run down the rest of the weekend, and then we can talk about that. All right, Ryan Truex got it done in the Xfinity Series. Look, I think that's great that Ryan Truex is now having some true accomplishments. Here's the question, though. Yay or nay, does it warrant a full-time ride?
Well, at this point, with his age starting to become a factor, if you'd asked me 7-8 years ago, I'd have said absolutely. Ryan Truex deserves a full-time ride, and it's criminal that he doesn't have one. Now, if we're talking about an Xfinity or trucks, sure, I'm good with that. I don't know that at this late point in his career it really warrants any kind of cup attention. But it just, when you ask questions like that to me, it just depends. It's who is he taking that ride from? If there's nobody better for that ride, absolutely, Ryan Truex should be running in those cars. I love watching him win races. I wish I'd gotten to see the race Friday night. But it's just, I guess it's just a matter of are the resources there for him to have a full-time ride where he is, and is he taking it from somebody else who's going to be working up the ladder later? That's the only issues I could pose there.
That's a fair question. Father Time, of course, is undefeated, but I do. I would like to see him get a full-time Xfinity Series opportunity. We'll see if that happens to come. Lane Riggs got it done the Milwaukee Mile, so it was a we had one Toyota special on Friday, but other than that, it was all Ford. Lane Riggs getting it done, kind of a spoiler. His first win, and then he dislocates his shoulder. Look, new winners are good all the time. What do you think of Lane Riggs getting it done, Kyle?
More power to him, man. His dad was sure happy about that too. I saw that on the broadcast. I don't know that I've ever seen him all my time watching NASCAR, and it's about 26, 27 years now. I don't think I've ever seen anyone dislocate their shoulder celebrating a win until Sunday. So that was something interesting to see. He put it on those boys there. Like, these are people fighting for playoff spots. A win would be huge, and Lane comes out there and puts it on them. There, nobody had anything for him. I was interested to see that. I want to see how his career develops as he goes further.
No, I agree. I think this could be the start of something pretty cool. I'm not going to get ahead of ourselves and say, oh, he's going on a run. But you know how it is. Once you get that proverbial monkey off the back, all of a sudden they sometimes start coming in spades. And I think he showed out at a good time. I mean, when you especially factor in the playoff picture. All right. So now we're gonna head more to your wheelhouse, just for you, my friend, just for you. Will Power got it done in Portland, Oregon. What do you think Will Power getting it done?
There's so many things to think about Will Power. There's times I love the man. Going all the way back to the double bird in the rain at New Hampshire. And then there's times he gets on my nerves, like, what was it, a couple weeks ago at one of the ovals? I think Gateway, actually. He chopped somebody in the corner who'd been running top five all day and then took them out and then screamed at him after the race like it was their fault. So Will Power's a wild card, man. And he's still, like, I love that he's still winning races and he can still get it done. He still deserves that Penske ride. Penske's got such a powerful lineup right now in IndyCar. But I mean, with a name like Will Power, you had to be good at whatever you did, right?
You better. You better.
That seems cheater, to be the way things go.
Cheater Will Power, baby. You damn sure better. And then finally in F1, Lando Norris got it done in the Netherlands. I know F1 is your cup of tea, my friend. So Absolutely. How about a big slurp slurp? Let's talk about it. What were your thoughts?
Well, I won't take up too much of the show's time because I could talk about this win pretty much the rest of the time we have together. But no, I'll just recap briefly. Max Verstappen loses his home Grand Prix to McLaren, and not just that, had to slowly watch Norris walk away into the sunset. I think he beat Max by 19 or 20 seconds as the final race finishing. That really puts this championship battle back within reach, not just the constructors' title. For those of you who don't know, Max has been doing it all for Red Bull. Checo Perez has really dropped off as a valuable points earner for that team. He's struggling to get it done. I don't know what it is. Something with him in the car doesn't fit. But Max has been winning a lot of races, and now all of a sudden, it seems like with in the last, including before summer break, in the last six races, Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, and McLaren have all won races. I think we have finally gotten a Formula One where the teams are so close that we can have actual championship and constructor battles again. McLaren is closing the gap to Red Bull, and I think Red Bull really is just trying to hang on for the rest of this season. So we're going to see a very interesting points battle down the stretch, particularly if McLaren continues to improve.
Well, I know you'll be keeping us informed, certainly in the group chat. I know that F1 is your is your bread and butter. Such an oddity for a Georgia man, but we'll let you have it. Anywho, I think
racing purist. That's racing, what I like to call it.
Racing purist. Well, in that case, you're going to love this next topic here in just a moment. And to get there, let's get to our happy hour headlines. Don't we love neon? Yes, we do. All right, so let's get to it. Austin Dillon's penalty today was upheld for good. It went to essentially what is the Supreme Court of NASCAR, and it is what it is. The win counts. No playoff berth. All right, Kyle. All right. I've had a couple weeks here to deal with this. And I still don't like it. I understand the safety concern. I get it. I do. And that's and technically it's right. It is. I know it's correct. But I cannot fault a man for letting it hang out and letting the skinny pedal eat, if you will, and just doing everything he's got to do, damn it, because he's got a family to feed. I just can't knock him for it. Look, I get it. Technically, you're right. It is unsafe. It's not sportsmanlike. But you know what? You know, we just watched the Olympics, and you remember that commercial, William Dafoe? I mean, that thing was a hit where he says, "I don't respect you because we're here to compete. We're here to compete. We're here to win at all costs." And damn it, when you're in a desperate situation, desperate times, what do they call for, Kyle? They call for a good meal and desperate measures. So I understand what you're saying, and I'm going to let you have this. Technically, you're right. I still just don't like it. You have the floor.
You took many of my arguments from me before I even got started saying you understood them. So I'll count that as a win before we get started. I get where you're coming from as well. I didn't the night that it happened. I was furious. And I think NASCAR was too, and that kind of led to what the penalty was. Look, there is a difference between hard racing and, as we talked about in my sport ethics class today with my students, we actually talked about this penalty. There's a difference between constitutive rules and then rules with penalty. So there gets to a point where when you're competing in something that you go so far past the line that you're no longer doing that activity. For some reason, the book that my class is taught by used the example of the goal in boxing is to get your opponent on the floor for 10 seconds. You can do that by shooting him in the head, but at that point, are you still boxing? I don't want to go with that drastic of an example for Austin.
Well, damn it, I had to win somehow.
I don't think what Austin did was anywhere near that level, but the parallel can be still drawn that at some point you must draw a line between what is acceptable and what is not. What NASCAR saw, I think, is that what's to stop, had Harrison not won this week, this past week, and we're going to Darlington, and Bubba and Ross are in a dogfight for that last playoff spot, what's to stop Bubba from just junking Ross in the last corner just to make sure that he got into the playoffs? He did what he had to do. I don't like Austin's argument. I wish they'd come with something more than just I did what I had to do. But I know there was no precedence leading up to this, but there's never been a time in at least my living memory that somebody has intentionally wrecked two drivers in about a second and a half to try to win a race. Unless you count McDowell at Daytona that one year, but we're not getting into that.
We're not going there. we're not going there. We'll go a lot of places, Mr. Finley, but we ain't going there. Again, after having a few weeks to really marinate on it, do I think you're technically correct? Yes, I do, actually.
That's the best kind of correct.
I just also personally, and nobody likes a bragger, let's just calm down a little bit. let me bring it home. It's just that, well, damn it. I like the idea that a driver is doing everything literally humanly possible, short of, again, breaking out your 45 and unloading one, but everything legally possible with the car to get it done. And I just understand that, and I can't knock that, because that's, again, there is the safety aspect, so don't let me overstate this, but we all want to believe that they're out there giving it everything they possibly have every single lap. And so that moment really appealed to that sense in me. At the same time, you're right, that is not the right way to win. He does get to keep the win. We do keep kind of we kind of gloss over that because he's not in the playoffs, but I mean the win does count. He is the Richmond winner. And so I guess they were probably, if I look at it with completely clear goggles, if you will, he's probably lucky to be that. He's probably lucky to keep that purse. He's probably lucky to have that notch in his belt for the sponsors and all the fine folks that make Austin Dillon in NASCAR possible besides Pop. I agree. I think they lost the plot a little bit, but I can't hardly blame them, because I enjoy the fact that I want to believe that everyone out there is giving balls to the wall and letting it eat. That's what I want to believe they're all doing at all times. Now, there is a line to that, and I will begrudgingly agree that it was crossed. It was crossed. But damn it, it was still fun to watch. All right. That's all I can ask.
Can I add one more point to that before we close it out? I'd like to draw a parallel from what Austin Dillon did at Richmond to what his teammate did Saturday night. I was very, very impressed with Kyle Busch's post-race interview. You know that man wants to win. You know that this has been a terrifically hard season for him. He's used to racking them up, running up front every week, winning multiple races every year, winning championships. He's not in a position to do that right now, and it has largely to do with the fact that the whole team is struggling. And yet, on the last lap of that race, he had multiple opportunities to just punt the kid, send him spinning. He's last in points. Nobody's even going to care. Really, if Harrison Burton gets spun, he wasn't a title contender. Kyle Busch winning would be a big deal, and Kyle didn't want to win that way. And he said so in his post-race interviews. He's like, I could have turned him, but you want to win it the right way. And I thought that was – an incredibly both introspective for Kyle, because he's been on the wrong end of getting turned coming to the line at Daytona, but also respectful attitude of Kyle with his fellow competitors. And I just wanted to draw a little bit of a dichotomy.
I agree with that. I would respectfully raise the fact that the difference between Kyle Busch and Austin Dillon, I know you're going to say, is class. But also, that guy's a two-time champion and is arguably in the GOAT debate. Austin Dillon has got, you know, now five wins, and And we all kind of, I don't want to say we all, I don't want to speak for you or I, but the large majority of NASCAR nation, if you will, goes, well, you're only there because Pop allows you to be there. And so I think sometimes that kind of chatter, and I don't mean that he thought of that in that particular moment, but subconsciously that's got to be in you a little bit. And I think that's what creates the desperate attempt to win, where I think it's a little different, where Kyle Busch can hang up the helmet tomorrow and he's the first ballot Hall of Famer without question,
absolutely,
bar none. So I do think there's a, I get your point, and yes, you're correct, but I do think there's a, you know, there's not a thin line between Austin Dillon and Kyle Busch. There's in fact a great wall of China between those two as far as resume and where they're at in their careers. All right, NASCAR is interested in San Diego for a future street course. This just came out earlier today. Kyle, I like this. I think we should be exploring more markets. And now I'm as old school gets. I'm happy about Bowman Gray. That's his topic for another time. But I do understand the need to explore different cities, different options, different markets. I love the idea of this. What say you?
So had the NASCAR in Chicago experiment not happened, I would have been totally against this. You know I'm an open wheel guy. I love my street courses. I love street circuits. I feel like a better way in most cases to showcase your product is to put drivers on a track that's specifically built for them in that market. So building a track there would be better, but I get it. If you want to do short term, a street circuit is the way to go. But I have to begrudgingly admit I was wrong about Chicago. I was expecting it to be a massive failure of an enterprise. The city, certain parts of the city didn't want it, and I thought they wouldn't support it, and it's going to be terrible racing. None of that happened. It was pretty good racing. The city came out in droves, even though it rained both years, and they supported it like crazy. And so, yeah, if NASCAR wants to do another street circuit in another big market city, I'm who am I to tell them no when they have Chicago to fall back on and said, well, look at what we did here. And it worked out great.
Now, that's a question I want to ask you before we move on. Do you think that would replace Chicago in terms of street courses on the schedule, or would we be going up to two, whether that's next year or 2026? What say you?
I don't know, because I know wasn't the Chicago deal a 3-year deal?
Yes.
Initially, or 2 years with an option for the third.
Yeah. And they've had a different mayor now, and it's a weird, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. We don't know whether we're going back to Chicago or not. I think if Chicago comes off the schedule, then San Diego replacing it would be a great option. It would be a little different, particularly with some of our fans starting to get tired of road course racing. I know road course racing and street circuit racing are not the same thing, but to the average fan, they look at that and they said, yeah, that's the same thing. They're turning right and left. It's a road course.
They're at least cousins to the average fan.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. And I don't know that we find something that works and start saturating the market with it is the way to go. That's how we got all the cookie cutters to begin with in the 90s when they were good tracks.
Yeah, well, that works. Let's do it a lot.
Yeah. If something works once, we'll do it 12 times. And I don't know that that's the way you retain the fans that you earned from the initial event. But, we'll have to see what NASCAR does with that. I don't know what the right call is. I would assume this would be replacing Chicago should something happen with Chicago. If they want to do two, I may have a different opinion.
Well, we'll have to figure that out when we find that on. We'll bring you back on just to let you yell about it. All right, let's talk
scream about into the void.
Yes, I'm really good at that, according to some. So let's talk about Trackhouse for a little bit. SVG is going to Trackhouse Cup Racing full time next year. He'll be driving the 88. I got people starting to go, did Dale Jr. buy in? And he has not bought in, but he thought, go ahead and have that sucker and build a new chapter. What say you, SVG, going full-time cup racing in 2025 is it fair to call the 88 an iconic number? It's kind of close.
Yeah, I'd say so. You had, what, Darrell Waltrip, Cale Yarborough, Dale Jr., Dale Jarrett all drive that number, all win in that number. That's
yeah, all right.
I could say that's an iconic number.
It's no 43, I mean, but it's pretty good. Yeah.
Or no 21. But we all knew this was coming. You don't bring SVG over and get him to essentially retire from all the success that he had in Australian V8 supercars just to come over here and run Xfinity and trucks races. Like, you brought him here to Racing Cup. He won once in one start and made everybody else in Chicago look kind of like a fool doing it. You got to get that man into a car, and we all knew it was coming. Unfortunately, there are only so many seats, and so he had to make room for some, like, Trackhouse had to make room for him by ending another partnership. But I think it's a great idea. This is the whole reason they brought him from Australia to begin with, is to come out here and win races, and he'll be a playoff threat. We have, what, three to five road courses, I think, before the playoffs. He'll be a threat to win every single time we go there. You get him a couple of wins, and then there's the Roval in the playoffs. If he picks up the ovals the way he has in some aspects, you might have a championship contender on your hands.
That's one thing I want to ask, though. I know he didn't come over here to just run Xfinity and trucks part-time. I get that. He uprooted his life. He's coming to the big boys. I understand that. But is he ready to be a full-time Cup Series driver in your opinion?
I think he got some of the experience he needed. And I think the rest of this season running, what, I think they added 5 more races to his schedule the rest of the year to get him ready. I think that's going to help. But whether he's ready or not, you got to go ahead and pull the trigger, because he's not a 22-year-old kid who has time to develop in the lower series. He's in his 30s. He's been doing this racing business for most of his life now, and I wouldn't call him in the twilight of his career, but he's definitely not a spring chicken who has 20 seasons ahead of him in NASCAR. So at some point, you just got to go ahead and pull the trigger and get him in and let him learn on the fly.
Yeah, the old learn by doing. There's nothing quite like it. Speaking of Trackhouse, you mentioned they had to make some room. Trackhouse and Zane Smith are going to part ways at the end of 24. I know we got a buddy that is high on the Zane Smith train. I mean, he's high on the Trackhouse train as a whole, but he really seems to like old Zane Smith. What were your thoughts on this? Are you surprised that Zane Smith is the odd man out and not a Daniel Suarez? And what's this mean for Zane Smith's future, in your opinion?
I'm not necessarily saying that I'm not high on Zane Smith. He is a great talent. I never thought it was Suarez, like the friend you mentioned seems to think it was going to be, partially because Suarez brings so much talent or so much sponsorship with him when he comes. He's a Mexican-American driver now officially, and he's won races when he needed to win races to extend his career. He brings eyes to the sport from on the international side, and that isn't the international side exactly what Trackhouse is trying to set up. Now that we've got – so we'll have Daniel Suarez and Shane Van Gisbergen in the same wheelhouse and under the same roof. That's two different drivers of different nationalities competing in a NASCAR – the highest NASCAR stock car series. So I don't ever think Daniel was on the cusp of that. Zane's going to fall on his feet. He'll be all right. He's clearly got talent. He's expanded and gotten better, significantly better this year as the season has gone on. And I do think that wherever he goes, somebody's going to gobble him up. I know Denny mentioned that on his podcast Sunday, but he's like, I've seen talent out of Zane Smith. I think the man can drive, and he's going to be really good down the road. So whatever he does somewhere, he's going to be successful in it. It just sucks when you have four drivers that deserve a ride and you got three charters. There's only so many seats.
Yeah, it's not personal, baby. It's business, and business is what it is. And finally, as we wrap up Happy Hour headlines, NASCAR's reportedly almost ready to announce Mexico City for the 2025 schedule for the Xfinity and Cup Series. I'm sure you've seen this, but if you haven't, it looks like we're going south of the border next year. And, you know, we're talking again about new markets. I love this. I know that for some, including some of my elk, where you're kind of closed-minded and you go, well, why do you want to go race to other countries? You're seeing baseball do it. MLB is branching out. Of course, it's a global game. The NFL is trying hard to be a global game. I think this is good. If we can get more foreign interest in NASCAR, that's called more money in the pocket, ladies and gentlemen. It all spends. I think this is a good thing. I think it's good to go international. I do. I think that's a plus. What say you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. I think this is a great idea. You mentioned MLB playing games in Japan. You know, the NBA has done games in China and games in Mexico. The NFL playing their games in London. Also, college football playing games in England, in Ireland, and in Germany. Like, this is what you do. Is you try to bring as many global markets to your sport, to bring eyes to your sport and get your product in front of them. You open up totally new markets. You open up totally new areas that could be interested in your sport and what you have to offer to them.
Amen to that. Producer Peggy, you got something to add? How you doing?
I would like to introduce a special guest.
Okay. We're flying live here, people. We are flying live.
And with that, I will leave.
Okay. I didn't know. Oh, wow. Mr. AJ England, how are you, brother?
Well, when I heard England, Kyle said a minute ago, he said something about the NFL in England, and I said, I've been called something along the lines of NFL in England. And it's good to hear everybody. I'm over here sipping on a nice Monster Energy in my Chevrolet Malibu, and it's been a great day so far. We're here in sunny California, and I just wanted to say hi and see if I could talk to you guys for a minute or two. That's all. How is everybody?
Doing well. Always a pleasure to see. Always a pleasure to see you, my friend. We were just talking about NASCAR. Looks like they're going to Mexico City next year and what that might mean. And you got any thoughts on that? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing muy bien, a.k.a. very well, okay? The thing is, in the world of professional stock car auto racing, when you think of Mexico, you think of one of two things, and that's either the Autodromo, where the NASCAR Grand National Series raced for about a dozen years in the 2000s, or you think about one great two-time NASCAR champion, Daniel Suarez, who's going for his first Cup title right now. Either way, you're very entertained. Who could ever forget the time when Carl Edwards, you know, cleaned his wiper with a Swiffer? What was it? It was really just product placement. Or who could think about when the Corona Mexico Series had some of the most exciting series ever? What I want to know is, will they have the NASCAR Mexico Truck Series there or not?
Well, see, that's a question I would ask you back in the day. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a little out of the loop when it comes to, you know, Mexican-influenced racing. In my world, you're usually talking about the great Cruz and Tony Pedregon, of course. But you know, actually, I'm only about 70 minutes from Tijuana, Mexico, and I'll go drive down there and ask the locals what they think, if you'd like.
Well, why not? Go report back, and we'll post a video here in a couple weeks, yeah.
Fizz, it's really good to see you, buddy.
Oh,
it's good to see you too, AJ.
Let you guys catch up. You go ahead and have the floor, Kyle.
Well, AJ brought up good points. The Autodromo has put on some interesting races back in the past. I think it would be an interesting race for Cup Series to be going to, particularly if they run the Formula One layout. I don't know how the Cup cars are going to get through that stadium section. But I do think it would be an interesting race to see because Cup cars tend to have problems passing each other nowadays, particularly on road courses. What? How do you help that? Well, you increase straightaways, you get them to the longest speeds, and you give them hard braking zones. Mexico has that in, I think there's two or possibly three hard braking zones on that track. It'd be great for what NASCAR is trying to do, which is create some kind of parity at road courses, absent the car creating it itself, which we're still working on. So, yeah, I think what's that?
It's all in the, you know, I live in California and you hear the word tranny a lot, but what it's all in the tranny. You either add a sixth gear or you drop a fifth down to four gears and you fix all of your passing problems right there.
I've been saying that for about a year now. I believe
four or six, or hell, I'll give you seven, but five is not the right answer.
Yeah. I think the fifth gear really does hurt them, especially at Martinsville. AJ, I think you've been spending too much time around the Force family. You're starting to talk very similarly to John.
Well, the boss man's he's a good man. I spend a lot of time around him. But, you know, if I was really doing that, I wouldn't be doing a great honor to my employer if I wasn't regularly telling you how about Cornwell Quality Tools. They're the only ones made with American jobs and American steel, built proud in the great state of Ohio. And, of course, when you get too thirsty, you can put Peak Performance products right in the motor. And I'm telling you, if that's not the greatest thing ever, you can just fill your diesel truck up with some Blue Def because they're the best high-quality diesel exhaust fluid made in America in Southern Alabama. And if you're not happy with that, then you just got to get all wound up on a little bit of Monster Energy. High quality. You know, you'll have known me a long time, and there's no energy drink on the market quite like Monster Energy. You know, high quality. There's a reason they're with champions and their racers win.
Logan, you need to get on that about product placement. Let's look at a little bit of ad revenue from this podcast.
Look, I'm going to do what I can. I'll talk to him and I'll talk to the founder and we'll see what we can do. All right, you hanging out with us a little bit here, AJ?
Well, I will. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to think about how flavor-packed frozen fruits and vegetables are the greatest for your evening dinner selections.
Yes, by God, we love flavor pack. Anywho, that means it's time for our weekend preview. Yep, it's like we're in Lightning Queen's trailer. All right, NASCAR is the Xfinity and Cup. They are in Darlington. Guess who else will be in Darlington? Racing Refresh's own Adam Carabine will be in Darlington.
Yeah.
So, Kyle, Lady in Black, playoffs on the way. Is there any chance your boy Bubba Wallace gets it done?
Thank you for finally mentioning just for a second. No, I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a chance he gets it done. I'm not expecting it. I would have loved to join Adam this weekend, but unfortunately, with my schedule with teaching classes and umpiring softball and reffing football every night during the week, and then driving to Daytona and then doing Atlanta 2 weeks later, I don't know that I could do three races in a row. It might kill me. Darlington is going to be a fun race. The Fords looked strong earlier in the year. I think Chris Buescher has a little bit of payback to give to Tyler Reddick at some point in this race. I think it'll be an interesting race. We don't have much of an interesting points battle anymore. It's really just going to be, can Kyle Busch, can Bubba Wallace, can Ross Chastain, can one of them put together a full weekend and not just run up front, but find a way to get it done and actually win at the track too tough to tame.
Oh, nothing like the old Lady in Black, my personal favorite on the circuit. But let's talk a little – my dog says hi. Let's talk a little F1. We'll be in Italy. What's your take on that?
Monza's one of my favorite tracks. I wouldn't call it my favorite track on the circuit, but it's definitely up there. Based on straightaway speed, it looks like McLaren would probably have the advantage here. Mercedes will also be good. I got to buckle down and root for Ferrari and hope they can get it done in front of the Tifosi in the home crowd. It's really just it's going to come down to who has the best straightaway speed and who has the best strategy.
And then the NHRA, it's time for the big go, 70th anniversary of the U.S. Nationals. Peyton and I will be there covering it live in living color. But I can't preview it and give it justice. I know a guy that can. AJ, yeah. Would you help me out a little bit?
Well, sure, I'd love to, especially with it being Darlington, which, whether it's called it or not, is always a throwback. I figured I'd throw back this PCAP for an older one, and this is a circa 1992 Kyle Petty Peak Performance Racing hat. So as we go into the 70th anniversary of a race that used to be known as the Chevrolet U.S. Nationals, we go into, the big one. You know, this is the big go. And, of course, our organization, we're chasing some great success. And we've got Austin Prock, the point leader. We've got Fast Jack Beckman in the seat of the Peak Performance Chevrolet. And the Monster Energy Chevrolet team will be running the Chevrolet accessories colors this week. It's a new paint scheme for the dragster. And so obviously internally, we're really excited, but the sport has something really excited too. You've got Big Jim Dunn's driver, Buddy Hall, going for his first career win. You've got Gage Carrera on this unusual rebound, era of his life after winning, 12 races in a row? And of course, you've got the young ladies. You've got Brittany and you've got Jasmine and you've got Ida Zetterstrom. Folks, every ticket is a pit pass. Go to NHRA.com/tickets today. And if you own an All-American hot rod, you're going to see one that looks something like yours in the garage on that 1,000-foot, quarter-mile racetrack. It's the greatest thing in the world. Greatest show on earth. Beat Barnum and Bailey's. I'm all wound up, but come out and see us. Brownsburg, Indiana. The U.S. Nationals.
Yeah, and Peyton and I will be there, producer Peggy. And then finally, IndyCar will be at the Milwaukee Mile. Kyle, what's your take there?
I love that we're seeing IndyCar yearly at Milwaukee Mile again. There was a time about 10, 15 years ago where we thought that track wasn't going to survive. It was being pushed by local neighborhoods to reduce loud hours, reduce weekend dates. Yeah. The parking situation is interesting there, and there wasn't a whole lot of fan support, and we really thought that track was just going to fold up and pack their bags and call it a day, and now it's back, and I think we saw a pretty good race from the trucks there on Sunday. This track was made for Indy cars, so this is literally what it was built for. I'm interested to see how the race goes. I think it'll be a good race. I think it'll be an exciting race. I think there'll be a little more passing than there was at Gateway, and we should see something interesting happen. You never know when IndyCar comes to town.
All right. Well, we got to get close to wrapping it up, so that means it's time for racing refresh picks. Producer Peggy, come on in here, please, and give us a score update on how we're doing.
All right. Well, our last round we picked was for the Brickyard. Adam ended up winning. He picked Tyler Reddick, who finished P2 at the Brickyard. Logan came in second, and I lost. Now Logan and I are tied with 54 and Adam has 52. So we will let our guests go first.
So does that mean me or does that mean AJ?
He's the founder. He's not a guest. Fizz, who you got? Make a pick. Who you thinking on the Southern 500?
Well, heck, man, if you're going to give me the first pick, I got to go with the guy who I thought was going to win the race back in May. Give me Chris Buescher. I think it'd be a huge win for him and for the RFK organization. He needs it. And he had hard to do it in May, and he and Tyler Reddick had a little bit of an issue that I'm sure they've talked about a time or two. I think he's going to be locked in, and that 17 Ford is going to be rolling, baby.
AJ.
Yeah. I'm gonna say first of all, thanks and hi and all that. But I'm gonna say the driver of the peak performance car, which is one champion Ryan Blaney, great pick, and of course John Force, 16-time world champion Chevrolet. I'm gonna go with the 16 Chevrolet. That's who's gonna win this week.
Why not? Why not? Who's next there, Bruce Peggy?
Next is me. And I have no idea because it looks like I've picked everyone and I know I haven't.
I was not prepared. I bet you didn't pick the 16 Chevrolet.
I have picked him. I'm going.
I don't think anybody who knows you saw that coming.
I'll take Harrison Burton.
Not a little back-to-back action. I could, you know, Wood Brothers. Oh, they'd be throwing babies in the air in Virginia. I'll take old Bad Brad.
All right, and Adam took Christopher Bell.
That's one hairy man picking a baby face. All right, people, it's been a lot of fun. So that means it's time. Hey,
talking about a hairy man with a baby face. There's Len Wood.
I talked to him today on a press conference. Story coming soon to RacingRefresh.com.
Yes, sir.
So with that, look, it's been a great episode, but every great episode must come to an end so we can get to the next great episode. So with that, it's a little time for, you remember this, AJ, closing time. All right, Kyle, give me some final words, brother. What's on your mind?
Well, if you were here earlier in the episode, you know I went to Daytona this weekend. I had a blast. Thank you guys for inviting me on the show to get to talk a little bit about my experiences there. It's always fun to talk NASCAR with you guys, even though Logan has some riding high opinions sometimes.
It's not insanity, it's Loganity, I hear to tell you.
We all love him, whether we agree with him or not. Had a great time. This weekend, or this past weekend, I'm sure Adam's going to have a great time in Darlington this coming weekend, and hopefully I can pop back on and give you guys my experience of Atlanta coming up in 2 weeks. I got a rare Friday off the day before, so I'm going up, and I'm going to experience the whole Atlanta weekend rather than just race day.
By God, I'll have my people call your people. When I say my people, I mean Adam Carabine.
And when you say my people, you just mean just me.
I didn't want to speak for you like that.
But, yeah, I've had a great time on the show tonight. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Producer Peggy, final words.
We will be at the Big Go doing Big Go things. And that's it.
Wonderful. You know, usually I end the show with some final words, and I tell you that, you know, just enjoy yourself and be well, and thank you for watching. Sincerely, Freddie, thank you. Ryan, everybody, we always appreciate you, and thank you for the growing subscribers on YouTube. We greatly appreciate that. But anytime we have him, I can't end this show, damn it. That's just not how this goes. AJ England, would you do me a favor? Would you do me one great favor, actually?
All right.
For old time's sake, would you take us home?
Yeah, how about I do it in the form of a poetic slam rap? Yo, it's AJ back on Racing Refresh. I had to slide into those DMs, couldn't leave it in distress. From the drag strip heat to the ovals turn, once a host, now a guest, still got lessons to learn. Racing's in my blood, I can't deny that. Need for speed, so I'm dropping rhymes like we're hitting top speed. Keeping the throttle down, stay smooth on the track. Remember to keep it fresh, because old AJ's always going to come back. And folks, at the end of every great episode of Racing Refresh, I always like to remind you, truly, truly, be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. Smile. Be happy And until then, take care. And for our friends to the south, sea amable consigo mismo. Sea amable con otro sonriese feliz hasta entonces. Cuídese. Take care.